Good evening. If you want to open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6, we'll be studying from Matthew 6 here in a little bit. Matthew chapter 6, there in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus teaches us to beware of practicing our righteousness before men. There's this story I read that's a story that the Hasidic Jews tell. It's kind of this legend that's gotten passed down. It's called If Not Higher, the story, and it's about this rabbi, and there are these rumors that were showing up about this rabbi, what was happening is every time that one of what the Jews called the High Holy Days would show up, they couldn't find him all morning long. And they started wondering what was going on with him. And the idea popped up that surely he must be ascending into heaven for those times to be even closer to God, who's very held in high esteem. So that's what these Hasidic Jews thought was happening. And then he comes back down on those days. And so this rumor spread, and eventually this skeptic comes into town, doesn't quite buy into some of this stuff, and he decides, I'm gonna prove this thing false once and for all by making an investigation. So he sneaks into the guy's house, and he hides under his bed in the evening. And the morning comes, and he watches the rabbi get up and go through his motions of the morning prayers, reciting the morning prayers. And he goes through his morning ritual. And then he sees him put on a workman's coat and a workman's hat and get an axe. And he can barely tell who he was. He's just in all of these. He's got work boots on. And he started walking through the town early, early in the morning, just as the sun was rising. And he headed out of town. And he headed into the woods. And all the while, the skeptic is following him. And eventually, he came to a little cottage out in the middle of nowhere. And he started chopping wood outside. And then he brought the wood. And he said, the wood is outside. And an old, an elderly woman's voice spoke from the inside and said, okay, could you light the fire as well? And he said, sure. And so he puts it in, he lights the fire, and she makes a couple other requests, and he takes care of it. And then he heads back into town. And after he gets into town, he goes in and he, changes into his rabbi garb and went about his work. After that day, the skeptic heard people talking about this rabbi again, and they would still say, he goes into heaven whenever this happens. And all the skeptic would say is, if not higher. I love that idea of the height that secret service brings in our walk with God. Ascending into heaven, if not higher. Jesus says here in Matthew 6, beware of practicing your righteousness before men, in verse 1, to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you go to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. It seems to me what Jesus is saying as we get into this study is who you really are is who you are when no one sees you but God. The challenge that comes up, I think, even for those here who, I know there are so many here who are doing great things, but there's this pull that we might feel to want to just get a little bit of credit. I was talking to a friend, a brother, at a potluck not very long ago, and he was saying, I do these things that are good, and I don't need to talk about it, but a part of me really wants my wife to know
the good things I'm doing, because I want her to know what kind of man she's married to. I'm not saying it's wrong to say anything to your wife or to anybody about these things. But he said, you know, but I also want these things to be part of my character. I want it to be something I just do that nobody, I don't even have to think about, and it just fades into the background. I think when Jesus is teaching these people about not being like the Pharisees who do these things, he's saying, sure, you might want to get an A. You might want some recognition. But here's what to remember. It's okay. We're built to want recognition. Here's what to remember. Who's grading the test? God will give us an A. If we don't give ourselves the reward ourselves first. Jesus says, beware. You know, when we hear beware, I think of like a, you know, the diamond-shaped sign. Beware of falling rocks. Beware of, you know, slippery floors. In other words, this is something you need to watch out for. You might not see it coming, that this is going to sneak up on you. Beware of it. Watch out for this desire to practice your righteousness. We can take on a carnal view that it's not real unless someone else knows about it. But maybe, and I think this might be more prevalent in many of the faces that I look out at here, is you're doing all kinds of things that are not noticed and are not secret, or are in secret, and that God does notice, but you might start to get discouraged because all the things that you're doing, you know, they're thankless jobs. Jesus says, if we don't reward ourselves for it, God will reward us. And we'll talk about that some more here in a minute. It's not wrong to give openly. Barnabas, in Acts 4 and verses 34 to 37, gave openly. You know, everybody knew that Barnabas had given, and there's no condemnation there that Barnabas has sold all this property he had back in Crete, I think it was, or wherever, that island that he was from. He sold all this property, and he gave all this money to the poor. And there wasn't anything wrong with that. But there's a danger for people who weren't watching their hearts. Because what happened in the next verses right after that, in chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira gave for the wrong reasons. And they made sure everybody saw it. It's not wrong to pray publicly, as Jesus does in our text here in Matthew 6. But it's wrong to pray publicly if you're not spending your time praying privately as well. If you're just trying to look like prayer is part of your life when it's not really. It does us good to practice our righteousness secretly. And I guess if I were to put a challenge out that's sort of the thesis of this lesson, it's, I'm guessing that most of us here are doing all kinds of things in secret. But the challenge is, do more. Do more because it does us good. There are rewards in heaven, and I would argue that there are rewards in this life also. It doesn't say when the Lord is going to reward us. It says God will reward you for the things that are done. And I'll talk about what I mean by that. Our goal is to be authentic in our service to God, so that he can reward us. It's about a life centered in God. There's this quote I read in a book that I really, really liked about a year ago. And the first paragraph says, "Superficiality is the curse of our age. The doctrine of instant satisfaction is a primal spiritual problem. This is the core. The desperate need today is not for a greater number of intelligent people or gifted people, but for deep people." And when I say deep people, I'm not talking about deep thinkers, you know, somebody who can go inside and think about really big thoughts. I'm talking about people whose life is centered in God, whose outer righteousness is flowing from a deep-seated devotion to God. In a word, sincerity. In another word, integrity. There's a few psalms that talk about this that I love. The psalmist in Psalm 51, David says, "Behold, you delight in truth in the inward being,
You know, a lot of times when we think about truth, we think about telling the truth. He says, you delight in truth in the inward being, and you teach me wisdom in the secret heart. Psalm 51, verse 6. It says in Psalm 15:2, he who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. It doesn't say from his heart. It says speaks truth in his heart. Are we being honest with God? Are we who we're saying we are? It says in Psalm 51, verse 10, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Be honest with him and before him. And when our inner life and our outer life are aligned, that's what the Bible calls integrity. Integrity is wholeness, being integral, being one. So Jesus says the Father will reward us. I suspect that the most important reward he's talking about is in heaven. And I don't know what all that means, but just being there will be reward enough. But as we do these things, it also helps us to grow in inner strength. You know, when there's something that just you know about, you and God, and the more you do these, they're just little things, and you just build. And all of a sudden, there's this habit of doing these small things for God and big things. And it builds our strength. It builds our sincerity. It builds that inner joy and peace in that deepening connection between us and God. The Christian life is at its... I mean, there's all kinds of relationships we have. But the Christian life at its core is about us and God, right? But one of Jesus' clearest messages is that we need to focus on the inside. He said in Mark 7:21, it's not what's from without, but what's from within that defiles us. I always think of Austin whenever I put anything having to do with pharmacy up there. But it's kind of like I think of these secret good deeds and when I read Matthew 6 as like hypocrisy X. It's like keeps big egos at bay, builds sincerity, keeps these things in check. It's a reality check for us. And it's just what the doctor ordered whenever we are faced with discouragement or when we're faced with that pull where we might want to have our motives get out of sync. You know, I told Alan that I thought his lesson this morning was, for me, my favorite lesson I've ever heard from him, and that's saying something. And it also happened to really align with my lesson today because what we're talking about is motive, and motive matters. Our motivation is a big deal. And Jesus, throughout the Sermon on the Mount, so we're right here in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus, throughout this, is turning life on its head and saying, in the kingdom, everything's kind of flipped upside down, and the heart is what's most important. There at the beginning, we find the Beatitudes in verses 1 through 12, these eight things that the world looks down on, poverty, mourning, meekness, hunger, purity, peacemaking, persecution. And he says they're going to bring a blessing from God. And then he says in verses 13 to 16, and this is a direct contradiction, it would seem at face value to what we're reading about here. He says, be seen. Get out there and let people see you. He says, don't hide your light. What are we seeing? Hide it under a bushel? No. That's my favorite part of that song. No! You get to yell it, right? Hide it under a bushel? No. I'm going to let it shine. He says, let people see your good works, not so that Ryan is thought of as the best guy there is, but so that they can glorify God. And as long as we keep that alignment focused, we're right on track. If every good thing we do ends up being in secret, that's a whole other problem. There's probably something off in your Christianity there too. How are we teaching? How are we letting people know what Jesus is all about? And then Jesus goes there in the Sermon on the Mount. In the last part of chapter 5, he takes these six rulings of the old law about murder and adultery and divorce and oaths and revenge and love. And he takes them to a stricter standard
while at the same time shifting the focus from this outward practice,
outward obedience, to an inner devotion. And that brings us to our text. So you can see there's something building here in the Sermon on the Mount where it's all about this inner life. And here in our text, he takes three practices: giving in these first four verses, and then praying, and finally fasting. These are things that Jesus saw abused by the Pharisees every single day. He saw people taking these things that were meant to be spiritual acts of devotion to God and turning them into a performance. And he says, just flip this right side up with the spiritual focus as first. So let's get into those three things. So the first thing that we need to attend to is secret service, doing good. Doing good without making a big deal about it. Maybe a better word than secret service is quiet service. You know, it's like, it doesn't need a trumpet, Jesus said. You don't have to, like, have a parade going in front of you that, oh, you know what Jason's going to do later on? He's going to fix those toilets, and he's going to make every... I had to go there, sorry. You were the first face I saw. and look at all the good that Jason does. He doesn't make sure that it's announced, you know? He just takes care of it. And I hope I didn't steal your reward by just talking about that. but sometimes, you know, maybe there's this idea of hoarding, like we only want to do so many good works. And the idea that I'm trying to get across again is doing more. And doing more, period. But when we do more in secret. Do more just between you and God. There's enough good work to go around. You know, some can shine, some can be behind a closet door. We need to not have a scarcity idea, but this idea of abundance. There's no limit to how much we can pray. We can pray without ceasing. We can pray about, you know, our clients at work or our boss. We could pray about, you know, that you hear an ambulance. Pray about that. I'm big on ideas. I love when people give me ideas on more things I can do. So I'm going to throw some of those throughout this lesson. You know, we could pray for our senators, our police officers, our teachers, our soldiers. You know, there's a random stranger. Throw a free prayer at him. Give him a blessing, you know. The barista at Starbucks, we can pray. And in that constant back and forth with God, there's a relationship that's strengthened. I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm going to talk about prayer here in a minute. But Jacob, this morning in our class, I asked the question about Ezra's prayer. I just said, what strikes you about this prayer? And I didn't have anything in mind, just seeing what they're thinking. And Jacob said, well, for one thing, it's really long. And I said, yeah, you know, that's a great point. This isn't a three-verse prayer, and there's a decent possibility that we don't have the whole prayer recorded there, you know? And so we talked about how, you know, just in our everyday relationships with one another, with people, and in the same way in our relationships with God, when we get past that first three-minute exchange where we're talking about, you know, if it's with one another, it might be first how you do it, and then it's maybe about sports or politics or weather or something, and then at some point something happens where we're talking about something real, talking about something that is important to us, and there's an authentic connection. And in the same way, the more we talk to God, at some point, we get deeper into that. It's kind of like, it's quiet prayer, interpersonal prayer to me feels like diving into an ocean sometimes. And you just sink deeper and deeper. I heard somebody say, maybe I read it at one point, it's always stuck with me, that prayer, that everybody has one standard prayer, one prayer script, if you will. And once we take that record and break it, then we can really start praying. And I find that with myself. I find that in my public prayers, that I have to be aware of that and try to just think about, okay, what do I really need to talk to God about? And certainly in my private prayers. But when we pray long enough, like Jacob said, you're going to get past that prayer.
And we're going to have that time alone with God. I'm going to be able to save us a lot of time because I can just skip my second point now because I covered it. So
Jesus uses this term three times in this text, in verse 2, 5, and 16, of hypocrite, which Strong's a Greek says an actor under an assumed character. That's what a hypocrite is. We have a meaning now that Jesus kind of coined and built where we see them as a person who is, you know, practicing really righteous on the outside, but on the inside isn't that way. And we might think immediately about the Pharisees because he talked about that a lot. But originally it's just an actor, and they did wear masks a lot of the time. And there's this idea of a performance. And we have to watch out for trying to get our reward from people whenever we're performing. I heard this story where this guy goes and he went to a show, and he thought it was a great show. But at the end of the concert, he saw these ushers who were clapping, these two ushers, and they were going crazy. I mean, he was like, yeah, this was a really good show. The orchestra was fantastic, but this is really encouraging. These guys that see this show over and over again are really enthusiastic. And then he heard him say, hey, keep clapping as loud and long as you can. If it goes into a second encore, we get overtime. And sometimes, if we're trying to get our approval from people, we don't know what they're after. We don't know what the approval is going to be. In fact, this hypocrisy cheats us out of the reality of Christian life, the real blessings, the truth of it. We said sincerity and truth, authenticity, genuineness, reality. These are all synonyms. The Christian life is a real thing. The Word of God is a living thing. God is at work in us whenever we are working with Him.
But whenever we let ourselves creep into this place where we're not about that inner devotion, we get cheated out of these blessings and cheated out of the real rewards in heaven.
Thomas Watson said, talking about our spiritual rewards, he said, the interest comes to infinitely more than the principal. I mentioned that by bringing up the work Jason does, I hope that he doesn't lose some heavenly reward. And I have this idea of, you know, whenever I talk about something I did, and it's just easy for me. I've been especially aware of it because I've been working on this lesson, and I've been noticing myself kind of, you know, not necessarily to make a big deal out of anything, but, you know, should I say, maybe I shouldn't say anything. I'm just not going to let that even, I'm going to keep that to myself. And this idea that whenever I say something about it, there goes the reward. It's like, poof, a heavenly reward just disappeared. I don't know if that's how it works or if Jesus is just trying to make an illustration, but the concept is very clear, I think, that the more we let God take care of the rewarding, the better it's going to be for us, the greater our reward. W.B. Yeats said, the light of lights looks always on the motive and not the deed, the shadow of shadows on the deed alone. When I think about secret prayer, one of the great, and I don't even know which of these two areas to put this point in, because it's really an act of service and it's prayer. One of the great things we can do in secret is intercession, is praying for others. You know, we can spend all day long talking to God about our spouse and praying for our spouse. And they never need to know about all the specific details that we've prayed about them. And it'll not only will, of course, God answer our prayers and bless us, but what I've found is it builds that relationship. It builds my love. It changes the orientation of my heart when I pray for somebody. We can spend our morning before worship service comes around. We can spend all morning, you know, while you're getting ready, praying for each person who's going to be sitting in the pew, praying for the person who hasn't heard the gospel, praying for the person who has heard the gospel, praying for the people who are going to lead our worship, praying for yourself that in that moment God would see in your heart your sincerity and that he would be exalted. We can start thinking about Jesus' sacrifice not just in the time that the trays are passed around. It's the Lord's Day. So we can spend time alone with God in those quiet places. Jesus talks about meaningless repetition, about saying things that maybe we don't fully mean, or maybe they're just phrases that slip out. And I like to think of that idea of praying without ceasing as this telephone that's, you know, I think of the red phone, you know, from Batman, because it's the direct line to God, but that's always off the hook. It's, we don't hang up the receiver. We might not be talking to God at this moment, but he's there. We haven't hung up on him. Finally, I want to talk for just a minute about secret devotion. So in this last section of the passage, Jesus says in verse 16, whenever you fast, do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do, for they neglect their appearance so that they will be noticed by men when they're fasting. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. And then he goes on to say how we should fast. Just to hide it. Try to do whatever you can so people don't know what's going on there. Keep it between you and God. We don't talk a lot about fasting. And I think there's two legitimate reasons for that. One, I think, is because it's not commanded in the New Testament. I can't find any place in the New Testament that says that if I don't fast, I'm not going to heaven. We do find examples, though. And we do find Jesus here saying how to do it. And I think that's the second reason we don't talk about it much, is that Jesus says, when he talks about how to do it, he says specifically, don't talk about it too much. So I suspect that there's a lot of people here who are Christians who have fasted, or maybe it's an ongoing, constant practice for you, but it's just not talked about. But because it's in the passage, I need to talk about it, and I think it's right for us to talk about it. Jesus fasted. I think when we look at Jesus fasting and the early church fasting, it often seems to be right before an important moment is about to happen, an important decision, an important act. Jesus, before he began his ministry in Matthew 4, the church at Antioch before sending Paul and Barnabas on their first preaching trip in Acts 13, 1-3, and the churches in Galatia fasted and prayed during the process of appointing elders. Appointing elders is a big deal. It's a serious act. So they fasted and they prayed. So we can take this act of fasting, which seems to be a way of putting an exclamation, the way I said it this morning when we talked about Ezra, it's like putting an exclamation mark on our prayers to God. Oftentimes it was in a time of distress or trouble. It's saying to everybody, well, especially to God, but in Ezra's case, to everyone else who saw him, this is important to me. I'm serious about it. It's an act of self-denial, an act of discipline, and it builds discipline in us. And we could extend the principle, I think, beyond food. I've heard of people fasting the internet or TV or whatever, just denying themselves. The point is, I think these acts of secret devotion, these sacrifices, happen all the time. Even if you're not fasting, I think we can extend the principle here to the idea of maybe when you give up something, when you give up something that someone else, somebody, let's say somebody wants something, your wife wants something, or your boss or somebody, and you just give into their way. Alan, on his slide this morning, he outlined 1 Corinthians 13, and there's a section of 1 Corinthians 13 that has struck me powerfully over the last about year. And that's the part of the verse that says, love does not insist on its own way. And I think if we were to take the principle that Jesus is trying to teach us here and apply it to that, what we get is whenever you give up something, whenever you do something out of love, don't even tell them about it. Don't make a big deal about it. Just do it. And there's nothing worse than, you know, someone who does something nice for someone and then becomes a martyr about it. Oh no, it's not a big deal. We can do that. We can do it. Your way is fine. Well, poof, there goes that reward. Whenever we make a sacrifice, keep it between us and God. So this challenge, went one slide too far. So this challenge here becomes about letting ourselves. Too bad we don't have the deacon in charge of this stuff up here. You got it, Brian? In my experience, I'm strongest as a Christian, I'm most useful in the kingdom, when I attend to doing quietly small things. They're usually things shared just between you and God. In Luke chapter 16, verse 10, Jesus says, if we're faithful in small things, we'll be faithful in big things. Close with one last story. This is about a guy named Lou Little. He's in the Coaching Hall of Fame. He's a famous college coach, and so evidently it's a true story because it's a real guy. Mr. Little told the story of how he had this this one football player that was a third string football player and not very good, and he'd been riding the pine all year. And his father had just died, and the kid came up to the coach and he said, "Coach, can I play in the next game?" And the coach thought, "Well, there's been a lot going on in his life, and what does it hurt? I'm gonna put him in for one play." And he says, "Well, I can't keep you in there for long, but sure, you can go in." And so he puts him in the game, and from the kickoff, the kid looked like a totally different person. He was in on every single play, and so the coach just kept leaving him in. He was tackling on defense. He was blocking on offense. He was just everywhere, like a monster out there. And after the game, which they won, and this kid was a big part of their victory, the coach said, "Why haven't you played like this all year long?" And the guy said, "Well, I that my father just passed away. And you saw me probably leading him around campus when he was here visiting before he died. What a lot of people didn't know was that my father was blind. So he said, today was the first day my father saw me play." Well, I don't know if that's how heaven works, but there's a pretty powerful lesson that if we remember that our father is watching us, it'll change the way we play. It'll change how we show up every day. Because it doesn't matter who's in the crowd, God is looking on. God's looking on tonight. God's inviting each one of us to continue fighting in his cause. And if there's any here who are not Christians, any here who have not been baptized for the forgiveness of their sins, we want to invite you to come forward and be baptized as we stand and sing.